Mason. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
I hope we are who you think we are. This is Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Justin, your Seahawks superfan. I'm going to be hosting much of this show. You're also going to hear from Nick, our chief superfan, taking over some of the hosting duties. It's week one. Football's began. I am so excited. I am so pumped. And that's not just because my team won. Football is back. It's real. This is happening. Before we jump into it, though, we've got a new sponsor, and I am really excited. As you know from the Friday show, we love the gambling aspect of it as much as we love the football aspect of it. That's why we're so excited to be sponsored by BetDSI, the online sportsbook. BetDSI has great customer service. Make a deposit at BetDSI.com, use the promo code FANUP10, and BetDSI will put 10 bucks in your new account to say thanks. Not only that, you get a 100% bonus on your first deposit when you open your new account. BetDSI is a top-rated business with fast payments of winnings. You can bet on sports, elections, you name it. They are the sportsbook of choice for the superfans. Once again, that's BetDSI.com, promo code FANUP10, no spaces. So everybody, please go on, use it, check it out, use that promo code. And then when you do, tweet us, at NextFanUp. Let us know what you think, how you like it. Just tell us that you used it. You can also hit us up with any questions, anything that you want to mention on the show. You can also reach us via email, nextfanup@gmail.com. Hit us with questions there. In addition, guys, we're looking for a new Bucks superfan and a new Lions superfan. These two teams won. These two teams, the Buccaneers in particular, looked really good today. I know there's fans out there, so please reach out to us. I do not want those teams to go underrepresented. Now we're going to start off by talking about the Sunday night game, the New England Patriots at the Arizona Cardinals, featuring Patrick, our Patriots superfan. All right, Pat, let's start with you. General thoughts. What did you think of the game?
In general, I'm pretty pleased. I guess that's an understatement, right? So, you know, people are isolating these first four games, you know, that Garoppolo have and saying, you know, if, you know, we're assuming we're going to lose week one to the Cardinals. And then if we can get two wins from the remaining three games, then we're feeling pretty good. After tonight, I feel pretty good, right? Like, we came out and historically people forget about this too. The Patriots normally start out kind of slow and sloppy for a Bill Belichick coach team in week one. It's weird. And it always gets like a lot of attention, at least locally, and then forgotten right away. But, you know, the first week or two of any given Patriots season, with the exception of 07, it's close games that are a bad call away from, you know, depending on your perspective, from being a win or a loss. And, you know, a lot of controversy around like the age of the players and things like that. And tonight they just looked really crisp. And, you know, the defense looked really good, and that's a veteran defense. But the offense, you know, the offense were guys that 6 months ago you would not have considered starters. And Jimmy Garoppolo is the obvious one there, but we're also missing Gronk, where basically starting two other, you know, newcomers at wide receiver, you know, in Hogan and Mitchell. I'm giving Mitchell like the quote unquote starter there because he was on the field a lot. And five offensive linemen that are either rookies or backups, right? Like the whole offensive line. So basically for returning starters, you have Blount, you have Edelman, who had a great game, and you have James Devlin, who's a fullback, right? And it's like everybody else is new to the game. And that looked like a really crisp, well-run offense, you know, with a couple of caveats around like some pretty bad offensive line play. But, you know, those are individual moments. As a whole, I think the entire offense played really well tonight.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of people probably forget because of some of the prolific Patriots offenses that we've seen over the years. But, like, at his core, Belichick is a defensive-minded head coach. And, you know, he always puts together pretty good defense. That's kind of my perspective. That being said, man, you guys got torched by Larry Fitzgerald. What's that all about?
I mean, we got a little torched by Larry Fitzgerald in the fourth quarter, right? Like, I don't want to take anything away from the Hall of Fame wide receiver and Larry Fitzgerald that he is. So, like, I'm not going to throw shade on Larry Fitzgerald. But, like, for the most part, our defense played extremely well against their offense for three quarters of football. And I think that's pretty well reflected in the score as we were, you know, winning that game. It's not like we were walking away with it or anything, but like we held the lead for the game.
I'm going to stop you right there. I'm going to read some of the thoughts from Dr. Jones, our Arizona Cardinals super fan. Kind of go through some of his, what he's thinking, and then sort of have you react to what he is saying. So, you know, his initial observations, of course, are not super thrilled. Mentions that rookie quarterback cost his team 2 touchdowns. Long snapper cost him the game. So it looks like he's pinning the blame for that. Missed field goal firmly on the long snapper, so throw him directly into the bus. Says offense was horrible. Play calling was atrocious, which I don't want to be mean to Dr. Jones, but I feel like that's what the losing team always says. Then we started calling good plays, but our defense couldn't close the show on third down is what he asked. Added, Belichick showed us why he is on that Mount Rushmore of NFL coaches. Perfect game plan defensively and offensively. No passion, no energy, and worst of all, we were horribly out of sync. Larry's performance deserved better. And he ends it with that. So how do you respond to that?
I don't have a lot of disagreement with what he said, frankly. I do think the long snapper cost them the game. I mean, you can never, like, firmly isolate a single player and a single play that cost you an entire football game with like 70 some odd plays in it. But like, yeah, the long snapper cost in the game. And I would say that the Cardinals coaching staff probably won the adjustment battle at halftime. I think that's pretty fair to say. You know, they came out and they, if I'm saying that we shut them down in the first half, but we didn't in the second half. Well, then clearly Arizona made some adjustments to play better in the second half. And I don't think it would be fair to put that on the Patriots and say that they fell apart in the second half or something, because that's not true. Like, Arizona came in and they played better. They played better because they made better adjustments, right? So that's good on them. And they came within, you know, a botched field goal of, you know, winning the game. And let's also be clear about that. Had the Patriots lost on a last-second field goal from, you know, from the Cardinals, and I know there's even like 45 seconds left, but had they lost on a last-minute field goal from the Cardinals, I wouldn't have felt bad about this game. I would have felt really good about this game, because regardless of the outcome, which is a W in first place in the AFC East, then, you know, we still had a quarterback who looked like a veteran quarterback with poise, making good decisions. Can you look back and say, like, oh, wow, Garoppolo really got lucky 4 or 5 times because he made some really stupid decisions and looked like a total mess out there? No, you cannot say that. Garoppolo looked really good, and our receiving core looked really good, and our defense looked really good. So I felt really good about that team across the board playing against a marquee opponent, right? So then as we go back and we play the dregs of the league, you know, and our division, I feel way better going into those games than I would had we come out and we saw a quarterback come up there and sport like a 72 passer rating as he just kind of eked by while turning around and handing the ball off to Blount, right? Like, that's kind of what I was concerned was going to happen, and that is not what happened at all.
Okay, so this is going to be my last question before I let you go, and I'm going to preface this with banging the drum I've been banging all offseason, which is I think the Arizona Cardinals will not be as nearly as good as they were last year. That might be NFC West bias, but just from what I've the age of their starters, I just question kind of the mental toughness of that team. So when you look at the results of this game, and so just know that that's where my question is coming from. Do you think that this is more a good showing by your team or a bad showing by the Cardinals?
Well, I think it's more I think it's more of a good showing by our team as a whole, because I also don't think the Cardinals came out there and embarrassed themselves. I know Dr. Jones is, you know, he's feeling a bit verklempt about the performance of his team, but I don't think that they played terribly at all. I think they were a good team, and they came out and they played well. The initial game plan, Belichick took away their best offensive weapons and their best defensive attacking weapons, and I'll game plan them. That's what he does. Like if there's one definitive trait about Bill Belichick, it's that. So that's not a surprise, and that's not bad on them. then they adjusted well. Their players played reasonably well all throughout. I mean, you just like you can't say Garoppolo played a horrible game, I don't think you can point to anybody, with the exception of the long snapper on the Cardinals, and say that they really screwed up. I guess he said their rookie corner gave up some plays, which is true too. But I mean, all in all, I think the Cardinals are a good team. Johnson's unbelievable, right? So, I mean, there's a lot to look forward to if you're an Arizona Cardinals fan. Like, there really is. They happen to lose a very close game at the end. I mean, like let's not go turning the lights out on them. Sorry, but like Pete Carroll's gonna have to actually like put together a season here.
Oh man, I was hoping you were gonna say that we could. All right, well, Patrick, always great catching up with you. Look forward to hearing from you next week. Good luck in all of your games except when we come to visit.
Ditto. I'll talk to you in week 8.
I am your Kansas City Chiefs superfan, Nick, and I am here to shepherd you through all of the games of the first half of Sunday, our first Sunday back in football. Obviously, you can hear that I'm pretty happy, but we're not ready to get to my game quite yet. The first game on our slate is the Atlanta Falcons and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Buccaneers take this game 31-24, and I am here with Tim, our Atlanta Falcons superfan, to break this down. Tim, it looks like Matt Ryan had an impressive game, but just not quite as impressive as Jameis Winston. What were your thoughts on the game?
Yeah, I mean, I'd absolutely agree. Matt Ryan had a really good game until the end when, you know, we had the opportunity to come back and tie it, but he kept throwing behind receivers. So, like, the last two plays of the game, behind Julio and behind Mohamed Sanu, everybody that was in the bar with me is like, oh, they're professionals, they should catch those balls. But no, Matt's a professional, too. He should put it, you know, on the numbers. But, I mean, on the whole, disappointing game, and it's the same team that we had last year, unfortunately, from the Falcons. Still no pass rush. I don't think that we got to Jameis Winston once. He sat back there and he just tore us apart. I mean, the defense was okay in the second half, but by that point it was too far gone. So yeah, I mean, really, really disappointing result. You know, thought we could do better, but considering we were down 18 to only lose it by 7, I'll take that as a win. You know, team showed up a little bit better in the second half, but you can't get off to those slow starts and have a second quarter fall apart like we did this week.
And are you disappointed in your own run game, or just given the kind of the shootout nature of this game, is that something that just feels like that kind of fell by the wayside, you know, naturally?
I mean, to a certain extent, I'm disappointed in the run game. You know, we didn't have any running at all, but at the same time, like, neither did they. I want to say Doug Martin was held under 70 yards, so, you know, that's pretty good for us, considering we have no defense whatsoever, it seems like. But, I mean, Devontae Freeman didn't get anything going, and Tevin Coleman actually was our leading receiver at 95 yards receiving, but he only had, like, 20-something, you know, on the ground. So, you know, on the whole, disappointing from the running game. But I kept feeling like we were running in weird scenarios. But, I mean, that's going to happen when Kyle Shanahan is your offensive coordinator. You're going to have some really, really weird stuff going on and hope for the best. But, I mean, we had some opportunities. You know, we won the turnover battle 1-0 with Desmond Trufant picking off Jameis Winston. But, you know, at the end of the day, it wasn't enough.
And just from your vantage point, what can you say about this young Tampa Bay team? Was it just a matter of they were able to take advantage of Atlanta's weaknesses, or do you think this is a team that has legs for maybe making some real noise this season and possibly sneaking into the postseason?
As of right now, after one game, I'd say that they took advantage of Atlanta's weaknesses. We gave them a lot of first downs off of penalties, and we played without our heads today. A lot of personal foul penalties, and I mean, that's going to happen considering it's a conference game and it's week 1 and they beat us twice last year. This is not what you wanted to see. And you know, Dan Quinn got his team that's fast and physical like he wanted, but a lot of the time we were overrunning players. And I mean, if you look at the end of the second half, you know, we let Tampa Bay score, and we had 5 people that could have tackled Charles Sims before he got to the end zone, and there's no excuse for Charles Sims to break 5 tackles and go into the end zone. He's the size of my girlfriend, and I mean, she's a little gal. I'm not slumming it with somebody my size. So I don't know. it's frustrating. It's frustrating. It's really hard to keep this a clean podcast today.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we will have more joyous podcasts to come for you. Thanks, Tim.
Absolutely. Well, guys.
Cheers. And it's now time to talk about the Chiefs' insane, weird roller coaster of emotions for me and for Ken. Win 33-27 at home against the Chargers. I am joined here by our Charger superfan Ken. And I know a lot of people were probably watching just the scrolling score on the bottom of their screen, wondering what the hell was happening. But the Chiefs down 24-3 in the early third. And that's because in the first half, I mean, it was kind of amazing. This was two teams like we had never seen. The Chiefs were committing penalties all over the place. Marcus Peters, our star cornerback, was actually benched for making a ton of undisciplined moves, including penalties. The Chargers are basically moving at will, making the Chiefs' defense look like nothing. The Chiefs could not get much going on offense themselves, and it was a pure domination, going into half 21-3. But there was one big turning point that was extremely unfortunate, which was that the Chargers' star wide receiver, Keenan Allen, went down with a knee injury late in the first half. Shortly after, you know, all of that went down and the Chiefs had even more depressing results to begin the second half, a turnaround began. And from there, I handed over to Ken, our Chargers superfan, to tell the rest of the story.
Man, Nick, I'm in a state of depression that I am not. I thought last year was bad, but this game was, honest to God, worse than last year could have ever been. 4-12 is hard to swallow, but 24-3 and lose it with our star player, that's honestly worse. The text messages that I was sending to my friends during the first half were the most optimistic I've felt about the team in the last 5 years. And in the second half, it was honestly an out-of-body experience for how awful they were and how similar this Charger game was to the same team that we've seen for the last 5 years. And honestly, like, I just don't know what to do anymore, man. This is so depressing. They looked so good in the first half and so horrible in the second.
Well, trust me, I was feeling the exact same out-of-body experience in the first half. I mean, I have not seen this Chiefs team that dominated since basically Andy Reid took over in 2013. I mean, the one exception, the one like sort of thing it reminded me of was a bit when the Chiefs came out extremely flat and with a bizarre game plan against the Titans at home in 2014 and ended up losing that game embarrassingly. But the Chiefs were legit getting embarrassed in the first half. There was not a single positive play. No good hit, no good tackle, no good offensive play, honestly. And somehow that all turned around in the second half. Alex Smith ended up with frankly, an amazing game, given what we know about Alex Smith. He ended up 34 of 48 for 363 yards. That's a 7.6 per throw average, two touchdowns, one interception, and a touchdown on the ground. And that touchdown was the overtime touchdown to win the game. I know that this is, look, my boss is the Chargers fan, so I've been talking smack for weeks. And I was petrified at how this team started out. But the fact is that Alex Smith is now 5-0 undefeated against the Chargers as a Chief. And how does that make you feel, Ken?
Well, in the first half, I was calling as many bookies as I could to bet the Chargers to win the Super Bowl. And in the second half, I was calling as many bookies as I possibly could to have Mike McCoy as the first coach fired. This feels awful. Alex Smith did play a fantastic game. However, I think there's still hope. I think if the Chargers can replicate what they did in the first half, I have no problem with this season because I think it's going to go fine. But the second half was absolutely unreal. The first half, Melvin Gordon looked like the offensive player of the year. He was breaking tackles with very little room to run. The Chargers defense looked incredible. I'm at a loss for words for what I can say about this stupid team. The Keenan Allen thing is it makes me sick. And honestly, it's a bad omen. It's a bad feeling. Everyone in San Diego right now is just sick. It's horrible.
I mean, the few takeaways that I think are consistently positive is that I did not expect, granted, you know, we had question marks in terms of how our pass rush is going to look without Justin Houston and what our, you know, the defensive backfield was going to look like without Sean Smith, who went off to the Raiders and actually had a bad game there. But either way, and I mean, either by Chiefs weakness or by Chargers strength, both of those units look good. I mean, it seems like a healthy Chargers offensive line is going to be strong, and Phillip Rivers can still do it, at least for one half of football. Does that encourage you, or do you think without Keenan Allen, you may be seeing flashbacks of last year?
So overall, I am very encouraged by this game. However, that's only because the first half was so good. The second half brought me back to the Steelers game last year when we lost to Le'Veon Bell taking a wildcat snap and just going to the goal line and pushing us around. But the first half was awesome. Like, I honestly think the first half is more indicative of the Chargers season than the second. It's just that second half was so awful. And Rivers really looked like a different person without Keenan Allen out there. I think we're going to probably sign James Jones back or get Tyrell Williams more involved. But right now, this Chargers offense is a mess. The offensive line did look a lot better, but without Keenan Allen, like, Keenan Allen was a huge part of this offense. I said on Slack earlier today that our second most important player went down, and I think that's true. I think Keenan Allen is, other than Rivers, and there's a wide margin between them in terms of importance of the team, but I think they're going to struggle to figure that guy out on the passing offense. But I do believe in Rivers, and I do believe in this team, and I was very, very encouraged by the defensive effort in the first half and the offensive line. So overall, this is one of the worst games I've ever seen. But for the season, I think the Chargers have hope. It's only one game, and I think that Ken Whisenhunt can make a Keenan Allen-less offense work. So kudos to the Chiefs. Alex Smith played really well, but man, it's just depressing out here, man.
Well, and on my side, I don't think we've seen the Chiefs come back from a 21-point deficit in a very long time, particularly not under Alex Smith. It seemed like a lot of our superfan battle early in the week was becoming prescient. I was saying that, like, look, I mean, if you guys get over us by 14 points, we're just pretty much done. It definitely seemed like that was going to happen. And so for me, I mean, like, look, obviously the bad sides of this are, you know, they're signs of true weaknesses on the Chiefs, but to be able to come back in this game, I feel like the Chiefs really showed something. Hopefully it woke them up out of whatever slumber they had to begin the season. And to you, Ken, we're not going to see each other face-to-face until Week 17. I hope, again, that is a meaningful game. We both kept ourselves in contention at that point.
Absolutely. Let's just hope that Denver's opponents next week don't miss field goals and that the Saints can stop a two-point conversion.
Pretty much, yeah. All right, well, thanks for joining on there, Ken. Go drink.
Thank you. See you next week.
Cheers. And that takes us to the Oakland Raiders' stunning win over the New Orleans Saints. I don't say stunning because the Raiders were heavily favored in this game. Just in the dramatic fashion that it occurred, this game seemed to all happen in the fourth quarter, although it was tight throughout, despite a really gargantuan effort by Drew Brees. Your Raiders, Monty, came away with this. So, Monty, I'll give you the first shot at explaining what happened here.
Touchdown, Raiders!
Sorry, I just had to get that out there. That was a lot of fun to watch. It's week one. I know that it's early, but, man, I've got a lot of questions about the Raiders' defense. Both offenses looked great. The Saints' O-line was way better than I was expecting. They didn't really – I think there was one sack. Couple others that could have been sacks, but penalties kind of ruled the day. I think the refs had a bad day as well. End of the day, you know, your coach is going to take a shot for two. To me, it isn't so much about Jack Del Rio having the stones to go for it and not go to overtime. It was just a complete no faith in the defense call. If Drew Brees got that ball back with 10 seconds left, he was going to win it with a touchdown or take it for a field goal. So, and they almost got one there at the end anyway, so... Man, it just was an awesome game. I knew it was going to come down to the wire. Crabtree's catch for the two-point conversion for the win is definitely worth checking out in the highlights. He went up and got it. And the Raiders beat reporter, you can't excessively celebrate after a play like that. I don't know when you can. He ended up getting the flag. It didn't cost him because Seabass booted it like 90 yards. And it was just a lot of fun game, man. It was really fun. Raiders offense was great. Raiders defense, a lot of question marks.
Well, it sounds like there's some flip side, positives and negatives here for you, Chris. I mean, I know you were not actually that optimistic going into this game, according to your preview. So given that you it was a 1-point loss, are you happy or are you sad here?
Well, I mean, I'll never be happy with a loss. You know, the offensive line played a lot better than I expected. The big issue for me was that the defense played really well for about 3 quarters. Once Delvin Bro went down, it really showed the inexperience of the secondary. I mean, we had 3 first-year players out there, and they just carved us up. So very disappointing, very depressing. When your offense plays like that, you shouldn't lose to anybody. If people are breezing up with over 350 yards, 4 touchdowns, no picks, how do you lose that game? So it's frustrating. You know, Monty and I both went back and forth. The refs were terrible. And for both sides, I'm not blaming the loss on it. The Raiders definitely have pass interference penalties that I'm not quite sure where they came from. But, yeah, you know, it's a tough loss to have, especially first week of the season, and for it to go down like that, it's pretty gut-wrenching.
Well, you mentioned Breeze. Breeze, his actual stat line is 28 of 48 for 423 yards, which is a 10.1 average per attempt, and 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, 1 sack. I mean, that's about as good as it gets in the NFL. Mark Ingram seemed to also have a good game, but on the Oakland side, the Raiders were able to kept on punching it on the ground after Derek Carr was able to move it around. But, you know, moving forward there, Monty, what do you think the Raiders have to fix on defense to make this thing work?
Credit where credit is due. I think Lewis, the Denver superfan, probably Greg and Neil jumped in there too. And I think you said too, with all these new pieces the Raiders have, it's going to take a while for them to gel and get on the same page. The defensive backfield just did not look good. Your boy Sean Smith, we paid him a lot of money, and he just made Brandon Cooks look like all world out there. He was jumping on plays that either he thought someone was going to help him over the top or he just thought he was going to make the play. I mean, whatever's going on in the defensive backfield, I think that's the first thing that they need to figure out. I thought they played against the run fairly well. Defensive line did okay. They did not get to the quarterback in my write-up. I think I wanted 4 soul-crushing, drive-killing sacks, and we didn't get that. And with the kind of money that we're paying Bruce Irvin, and then we got Khalil Mack, all pro. I mean, we got to get to the quarterback. The first thing that they're going to need to fix is definitely the defensive backs. I think they've got talent. So last year, the defensive backfield, the secondary was a huge issue, but it just wasn't any hope that it was going to get much better. It would just get worse as the injuries came along. So Nate Allen got the start today over the rookie. I'm hoping that once he kind of fully recovered from his injury, gets on the field, he'll be out there to make some plays. And then I think you had kind of made a point that Sean Smith needs to not take chances and just play sound and use his physical presence to shut the other players down. But that they need to get on the same page. I know that's a huge win, and I'm sure they're excited. I mean, Twitter's going crazy. At least my feed is. But, boy, there's going for 2 at the end of the game like that when there's not much time instead of going to overtime just lets you know that there is just zero faith. Smith ended up playing, getting benched, essentially. I mean, he might have got banged up, but he looked like he was standing on the sidelines ready to go in, and DJ Hayden was out there. And DJ Hayden, man, for every play that he made, they seemed to call a ticky-tack penalty, and then the next play he would just make a terrible play. So he's definitely not the answer. But, yeah, from where I'm sitting, the offense looks as good as advertised, and the defense is potential, and potential will get you killed. So I'm hoping that they can figure it out.
Well, and real quick for you, Chris, you know, your defense was historically bad last year, but you had some good things here. You had 3 hits on the quarterback. You had 4 pass defense and 4 tackles for loss. How improved is this unit, and how much is that going to help you this year?
Well, I mean, it's all about Delvin Bro. You know, this game, I think, showed you 2 things. It showed that they progressed a lot. I mean, again, this offense that looked great didn't look great for the first half, and really mostly through the third quarter. New Orleans really kept Oakland in check. It wasn't until Bro went out. Now, the flip side of that is it shows how little depth we have. You know, one injury shouldn't kill a team. Unfortunately, with this defense, that's where we're at. So they're trending in the right direction. The Saints are going to win some games with this defense, providing he's healthy. But it's going to be a tough year. Elite offenses are going to torch them. You know, P.J. Williams in his first game had a lot of bright spots. Turns out Amari Cooper's better. So it'll be interesting to see him grow. And, you know, just kind of see where it is. You know, it's a tough loss. No one wants to lose like that. but it could be worse. I could be a Chargers fan, so I've got that going for me.
That is right. You could be a Chargers fan. But, thanks, guys, for chiming in.
Yeah, shout out to Ken, man. Tough loss. Tough loss with Keenan Allen. That guy's a good player.
Yeah, really sucks for him. So we got James here. How's it going, James?
Going good. Good week one so far.
Yeah, well, it's good to start out against Cleveland.
I didn't make the schedule.
All right, well...
It was still a dominating performance, though.
Yeah, well, I don't think we're going to get Ben the Browns fan, but I am going to grab myself another beer just in case, give him that amount of time to show up. And it's purely because, you know, it's my judiciousness of letting him to come, not because I want another beer. But I'll be right back.
Okay.
Looks like it's me and you, James. Let me pull up your box score here. Cool. Well, I'm ready when you are. You good to go?
I'm good.
All right. Well, so the way I'm going to do this, I'm just going to like lead you into it and try to give a bit of sort of recap of how the game went in terms of momentum changes and things like that. And then I'll just sort of ask you, if I feel like you left anything out on your side, then I'll ask you about that, but then otherwise, then I'll probably ask you about the Cleveland side and what could be taken away on that end, but yeah, that's how we're going to do it.
Okay.
Cool. And we now turn to the Cleveland Browns and their road loss to the Philadelphia Eagles, 10-29, 29 being the Eagles winning that one. And Carson Wentz, the rookie, who was thrust into the starting lineup after the trade of Sam Bradford to the Minnesota Vikings, he looked good to start out this game. How are you doing, James, our Eagles superfan, and what did you see from your side in this game?
I'm doing wonderful after a good week one, solid performance by Wentz. The first drive was very indicative of pretty much how the game went, especially the first pass. Nice little touch to Zach Ertz, who made a beautiful one-handed catch and only one incompletion, ironically, by Jordan Matthews, who dropped his first pass but caught the second one in the corner of the end zone. Wentz showed poise. He showed calmness, complete control of the offense. Yeah, it was a lot of short passes. They didn't air it out till later on in the second half of the game, but as far as Wentz for right now, he played beautifully today. That's pretty much the only word I have for it, is he played beautifully.
Well, and it seems like you got good production on the run side as well. You got to feel good about Jordan Matthews as a young receiver. There was a lot of questions about this receiving core going in. Who really stood out on either side of the ball for the Eagles for you?
Offensively, I will say Jordan Matthews was a standout. Aside from Wentz's debut, 7 catches, 114, and touchdown. Did have a couple of drops. The running game was a nice complement. Combined, Matthews and Barner put up over 100 yards. They really tried at the end to push Matthews into the end zone. Ryan Matthews, that is, the running back. But Jordan Matthews, even with Hayden on him for pretty much most of the day, did enough to get open and have lanes to where he could pretty much present himself to Wentz as the number one target. Aside from that, both tight ends, Ertz and Celek, were secondary targets downfield as well. Defensively, it was the entire unit. Once we got up, the front four, led by Barwin and Graham and Cox and Logan, they just teed off against Robert Griffin. The running game of Cleveland's never really got started to balance anything out. There were a couple of gaps on, I think, two or three deep plays that Griffin went to Terrell Pryor on for 44 and 58 yards, respectively. The 58-yarder was really the killer because three defenders were nearby and no one knew where the ball was except for Pryor. So a little disconcerting there, but got cleaned up later on in the game. And just total dominance by the defense. Three sacks, the interception, the safety, which is mostly a high snap by the center over Griffin's head. So overall, I'm very happy with this win today.
Well, if you're a Cleveland fan, you know, we saw some really impressive big plays from them in the preseason. But again, everyone was sort of expecting them to be a bottom feeder this year. I mean, are there signs of hope for them, or do you think they're just too unbalanced and inconsistent of a team?
Well, listen to the broadcast. They said that Hugh Douglas was going to pull out all the stops today, and nothing was out of the realm of possibilities as far as the play calls they were going to do. I mean, there was a fake punt in the first half that didn't work, but did kind of change momentum a little bit in the second quarter when they scored their 10 straight points. Aside from that, they've got some talent at wide receiver. The offensive line looks a little bit shaky for Cleveland, but I'm not sure where the running game is going to come from if Griffin doesn't take off downfield. The running backs look to be bottled up all day. I'm not even sure if anyone had more than, say, 30 yards. Other than that, defensively, there look to be problems at every level. 94, I can't remember his name, did cause quite a few problems for Wentz. He was in his face for pretty much most of the game as far as the pass rush for Cleveland. So there's a start there with the defensive line, but Hayden is not the player he once was playing corner. Maybe that'll get better as the season goes on. But as of right now, that secondary, I mean, Carson Wentz just literally picked them apart today. I don't, unless they turn the corner later on to change something up in the scheme as far as what they do against other teams, the defense is going to be a big problem.
All right. Well, congratulations on the win, and thanks a lot for joining us, James.
Sure thing.
This is Seahawks Justin again. This time I'm going to be talking about the Minnesota Vikings versus the Tennessee Titans. This game really was a tale of two halves. I mean, to start off the game, the Vikings couldn't do anything. They couldn't throw the ball. AP couldn't run. AP didn't run all day. He finished the game with only 31 total yards off of 19 attempts. Blair Walsh had missed two kicks. I mean, they were really doing nothing. Tennessee, meanwhile, was having okay success against a good defense. They weren't scoring really touchdowns, but they were moving the ball okay. They especially did a nice job throwing to their running backs, DeMarco Murray and Henry, two guys who I will admit I am not that high on. They ran okay, but they caught the ball pretty well. So it's 10-0 at halftime. Then the second half starts, and that's where the Vikings defense takes over. So pretty much nobody on either team seemed interested in scoring offensive points. So the Vikings defense just does it themselves. First, they score off of a pick six on a 77-yard return of a pass from Marcus Mariota. Then, a little bit later in the game, Marcus Mariota fumbles the handoff. They kind of screw that up, and then that one gets returned for a touchdown. Now, I like Marcus Mariota. I think he's a good player. I think he's going to be a really good player. I think he's got just about everything. You know, he can throw. He can run. He's got a good head on his shoulders. He's learning the pro-style offense now really well in the second year, I would hope. But he gave two touchdowns to the opposing team. And, you know, it was just as much the Vikings taking as he was giving. But still, you certainly got to look at the quarterback. I think he'll be fine. I think he'll bounce back. But that was obviously a huge factor in the loss. Meanwhile, the Minnesota Vikings, who are without Teddy Bridgewater because he absolutely obliterated his knee, went out, traded for Sam Bradford, who did not play. Instead, it was Sean Hill, which I think was the smart move. Sean Hill is a veteran, is putting it nicely, ready to cash in his AARP is another way to put it. He's definitely an older football player. But he's been in the system for a while. He's been around the block, and he didn't try and do too much. I mean, the key stat for him isn't how many touchdowns did he throw, but how many interceptions, and that was zero. You know, he had 200-plus yards, no interceptions, played a clean game, didn't give anything away, didn't give extra possessions to the opposing team. That's exactly what you want out of him. I mean, maybe they'll get more out of Sam Bradford once he's more acclimated with the team, but I don't think they need it with how good this defense is. This is a team that, in my opinion, and I'm a well-known, not huge fan of Teddy Bridgewater, I think that the defense drug this offense kicking and screaming into the playoffs last year, and I think they've got the potential to do that again. I don't know if they'll win the division. I think with a healthy Jordy Nelson, Green Bay is too strong, but I still think that they're at least good enough for a wild card with that defense, especially if they can get the running game going. Obviously, Adrian Peterson, you know, another year, a little bit older, you know, we're always wondering when's he going to hit that wall. I mean, he's kind of a freak. I think he's kind of he's an all-time great in my opinion. So, you know, he may not hit that wall like a normal running back does, but you have to suspect that at some point he's going to start to slow down. The additions that the Vikings have made to their offensive line, in particular Khalil, over the last, you know, 4 or 5 seasons, I don't think have panned out that well. So I don't know that their offensive line is that strong. So I don't know if they're going to have a really, really good running game to lean on necessarily. I don't think having Adrian Peterson just makes that automatically happen. Maybe not at this stage of his career, but I could be wrong. But as long as you get steady quarterback play, not giving up the ball, and you pair it with that defense, that's a winning combination. That's going to win a lot of games against pretty much any bad teams, probably a decent number of good teams. For Tennessee, I still think they're doing things the right way. I mean, they're building this team up. You compare it where they were a year ago, I think they're going to have a very high draft pick this year. But I think that, you know, with Derrick Henry, with Marcus Mariota, yeah, you look around, they've got pieces. I think that it's just going to, you know, another year or two before they're really, really a solid team. The Vikings, as a Seahawks fan, are one team that I'm definitely cautious about seeing down the stretch.
All right, well, it is time to turn to the Cincinnati Bengals in their win 23-22 over the New York Jets. We are joined here by our New York Jets superfan, Andrew. So, Andrew, this was a game that seemed to go really down to the fourth quarter, but the Jets just weren't quite able to top it by, you know, it's a one-point loss, but what did you take away from this game from your side?
Well, first thing I took away is that the minute Nick Folk had that 23-yard field goal blocked and then missed extra point, I knew the Jets were doomed to begin with. So maybe I shouldn't be so surprised. And then, of course, you had the Brandon Marshall dropping that ball on the potential game-winning drive. But, again, it's hard to say this in the moment because it's just like they've lost such a Jetsian type of game. But there was a lot of stuff that I really liked. The Jets probably have the best defensive line in football. They were just wrecking that Bengals offensive line. The Bengals offensive line has one of the most talent in all the NFL, and they were just destroying it without Sheldon Richardson. And then, of course, we had the running game. Bilal Powell and Matt Forte had success against the Bengals. But, again, it's hard to look at this game and be confident with Ryan Fitzpatrick going forward. I mean, I'm one of those guys who's saying all offseason it's not that big a deal if you don't bring him back. It's not that crazy situation if he ended up even going with Geno Smith. And you saw that. I mean, Fitzpatrick's numbers, they'll look okay. But if you watch the game, there were a couple of missed throws that he should have made. And then there were a couple of plays that should have been intercepted. That just seems like every week it's the same thing. And maybe at this point it's just a skill that he's able to avoid interceptions like that. But it's frustrating, especially with the Jets' schedule coming up. If they were able to steal a win this week, it would be a lot easier to get through these next six games. But the Jets are going to need to go 3-3 the first six games in order to have a shot. But after these first six games, the schedule eases up a little bit. But if you look at these six games, I know they play Arizona, they play Seattle, they play Pittsburgh. So this Thursday night against Buffalo, they're going to have to come out and win that game. And it's crazy to say that in week two, but that's just the way it is.
Yeah, Fitzpatrick did have two touchdowns, but also an interception and a fumble that was luckily recovered. But he did only have 5.4 yards per attempt, whereas Andy Dalton, despite the fact that he was sacked 7 times, he still managed to go 23 of 30 for 366 yards. That's 12.2 yards per attempt, a touchdown and an interception. From the Cincinnati side, given all the disruption that you had, they still were able to move things and get scores, obviously. What do you think about them and their prospects for the season?
I mean, I really liked them coming into the year. It was just a matter of Dalton being able to hook up those new weapons. And you saw at the beginning, he was struggling. Another point of emphasis I would look at is center position. I mean, the Bengals probably have the best roster in all of football. Either them or the Cardinals, or to take away the quarterback position, even say the Jets. But like the center position is getting pushed back. Russell Bodine is getting pushed back in any Dalton safe every play, and Dalton stared it down and was able to make plays here and there. And AJ Green beat Darrell Revis on a 58-yard touchdown. I mean, it looked like maybe the safety busted the coverage, but as long as he has that guy there, they're gonna have a shot. But that guy's just a monster. And He continues to be underrated, and I really think he should be in that class with Antonio Brown and Julio Jones as the two best receivers in football.
So how are you feeling about the, how this sets you up for the next few games?
Set me up for the next few games? I don't know, man. I still got to get over it. It's as a Jets fan, it always takes me a couple of days to get this like sinking feeling out of my stomach, and it's going to be difficult. But I mean, I like the team. It's just that the schedule is a real issue, and Fitzpatrick is a real issue. I don't know if they're able to hold up, but again, the Jets win this game, they make a couple of field goals, or Brandon Marshall makes a catch. So that's the way football works sometimes. And the Jets came out on the losing end. Maybe they'll catch some breaks in weeks to come.
All right, well, better luck in the future until you face the Chiefs. But for now, you know, one-point loss is, you know, it's not too bad.
Yeah, okay. Well, at least Vegas got the spread right. At least we covered, so we got that going for them.
There you go. All right, thanks, man.
All right, later.
And next up is the Green Bay Packers' 27-23 win over the Jacksonville Jaguars. I know that the Packers were heavily favored in this game, but the Jaguars kept it close. They were fighting hard. But nonetheless, Aaron Rodgers still had what seemed to be a very Aaron Rodgers-like performance. Green Bay, Brian, you're here with us. Give us your sense. Like, how did the Packers close this thing out?
Well, it was definitely closer than I think most people expected. But you know what? A win's a win. It's tough to win in the NFL, and it's tough to win on the road. And I'll give it to the Jaguars, too. They, you know, I think they're an up-and-coming team, and I think this is as much of a statement game as you can have in a loss. They kept it close the whole way. From the Packers' perspective, I would say that some pluses and minuses. The line, which I was very worried about after losing our All-Pro left guard 8 days before the season started, the line performed just fine. You know, Lane Taylor, I didn't get a chance to watch him specifically. I was trying to just kind of watch the ball, but I didn't notice him positive or negative, which I think is a good thing. I think he played just fine. We'll have to see what they talk about this coming week. The running game was good enough. It wasn't great. I think we averaged about 3.8 yards a carry, which was good enough to win this week. I don't think it's going to be good enough to win every week. And as far as the passing offense goes, I will say it. I was a little bit nervous because we saw Jordy Nelson return. I think everybody was expecting everything would just go back to the dynamic offense that we saw. And it, for stretches of that game, we did see some of the same problems present themselves as we saw last year, where receivers didn't really appear to be getting open. There were a lot of plays where Rodgers had to extend the play and try to find somebody on kind of a second reaction. But then I was a little bit encouraged. I think about the third quarter, we had a couple of drives there where we were really, really clicking on the passing front. So that was good. On the defensive side of the ball, I thought played pretty well. That's a really good offense. The defensive line, which if you've listened to me this offseason, has been a big concern of mine, just how few people we have there, coupled with, you know, a suspension for one of our rotational defensive linemen and the extremely hot weather that they were playing in today. I was worried that if we were in a close game and they were able to run the ball, that this was not going to end well for Green Bay. But they really managed the running game very well. I didn't see the final stats on that, but they couldn't have had more than 50 or 60 yards rushing all day. Passing game, you know, that's a good passing offense. Their tight ends especially kind of burned us a little bit. Allen Robinson, we were able to hold in check, as well as some of the other wide receivers that they have, and able to force a couple of turnovers and eventually just kind of pull out the win. So good win. I'm happy we can move on to next week, and we'll see how we look against the Vikings.
Well, you know, one thing I noticed is that in the preseason, at least, it looked like the Jaguars were going to have a really prolific and really strong rushing attack, but they really weren't able to get it going on the ground against Green Bay. And, you know, I felt like the Green Bay has had an underrated defense for the last several years. How much of that is really a credit to your guys' you know, front seven, and how much of that is just, you know, maybe the Jaguars were a bit overestimated on that side?
I think there's some credence to that the Packers have flown a little bit under the radar. I think we are a bend but don't break defense. I don't think that we're going to force a lot of three and outs, but I think we're going to keep points off the board by forcing turnovers. At least that's been our MO. I would say that the front seven is not as strong as maybe the back seven. We are really strong in the secondary, and there's a lot of really young talent there. And I think we got to see some of that today. The front is fine. I think they're good enough. I think in general our defense is
above average, which is probably enough if our offense is clicking to challenge for the Super Bowl and actually, well, to win the division for sure. So I think you're right about that, that the Packers defense probably deserves a little bit more credit than they get.
Great stuff. Well, I will look forward to watching you guys. I mean, I think you're a popular pick for the Super Bowl. You're one of mine. I've been picking the Packers for a while and been disappointed the last couple of years, but I hope you guys prove me right this year.
Well, I hope that too. Take care, Nick.
You too. And in yet another extremely close game, we had the Miami Dolphins falling 10-12 against the Seahawks in Seattle. The Dolphins, they were looking good. They looked like they could really pull off what is a very, very difficult win. Among the most difficult wins you can make in the NFL, which is winning in Seattle. So, Ron, how did they get it this close, and how did it go wrong?
Somehow the defense, which we thought was going to be the Achilles heel of this team, and I really figured the Seahawks to score 30-plus points on them, they just played well. And Vance Joseph just had them playing as a good team. They were getting to Russell Wilson. They were able to keep some kind of contain on him. Rashad Jones was playing well. Sue was playing well. Our rookie cornerback, Xavier Howard, had a pretty good day. Maxwell wasn't fantastic, but he didn't really hurt us, and they just kept keeping us in it because the offense just really couldn't do much against Seattle's defense, and that was to be expected. I didn't think it quite be that bad, but that really was to be expected. I felt like we were a little hamstrung on the offensive side of the ball with not having Devontae Parker, but I mean, let's face it, that Kenny Stills drop touchdown, I mean, that just, even though it was so early in the game, how huge did that end up being? I really felt kind of defeated a little bit to that point, even though we stayed in it. And then when we went up, I thought, well, maybe we have a shot. But that last drive, they decided to kind of play a little bit softer, not really go after Russell Wilson. They couldn't seem to quite get to him, and he was hurt. He definitely wasn't the normal Russell Wilson. I felt like they needed to be blitzing and making him get rid of it, not letting him sit in the pocket, kind of like they had been during the game. And I feel like that really cost them more than anything.
Well, and for you, Justin, you know, you came out with the win, but this was a very, very close brush with a home loss. How do you feel about the Seahawks and how they performed today?
You know, I was nervous earlier this week when I heard that Jermaine Ifedi wasn't going to be playing. You know, Ryan and I have kind of covered it, but the big strength, I thought, defensively for both teams in this game that was going to show up was going to be the defensive lines, and that proved to be true. Absolutely. I mean, that made all the difference on both sides of the ball. Both quarterbacks really got abused, and with Jermaine Ifedi out, you lost a great deal of talent and continuity on that offensive line, and man, did it show up. I mean, Ndamukong Suh was just an absolute machine. Mario Williams, before he went out with a concussion, was very, very disruptive, as was Cameron Wake. And so, you know, if there's no time back there for Russell to throw, and if there's no push whatsoever for the running backs, this offense is very limited. I mean, it's really important. So, yeah, I mean, it's closer than I thought it was going to be for sure, and I really thought there was a good chance we were going to lose there at the end. But, you know, I don't think there's anybody in the NFL who, with, you know, 2 minutes to go and 80 yards to drive, that is better with the football than Russell Wilson. I think 31 other teams would love to have him as their guy in that situation. I mean, that injury is obviously concerning, but, you know, he's proven over the last couple of years that if he has to be a statuesque pocket passer, just give him a little bit of room, and he can do it. I don't know why they stopped bringing the heat Miami did on that last drive, because I thought that really made as much difference as anything else.
Well, and Christian Michael for Seattle got off fairly well. He had 15 carries for 66 yards. That's a 4.4 yards per carry average. But it was the first full game of Arian Foster we've seen in quite a while. So I'm interested in your thoughts on him, Ron. Going forward, do you think that Arian Foster can be a sort of a regular feature back for Miami? What did he show, and how do you think that's going to shake out in terms of the Dolphins running game going forward?
I like the fact that Miami kept running the ball, even though many times they were just getting 2 or 3 yards. Last year, our run-to-pass ratio was really lopsided under Lazor and Philbin. And even though they kind of knew they'd only probably get 2 or 3 yards at a time, they were trying to keep it honest, and I think that helped a little bit. I'm surprised how much they used Foster. They've been really trying to manage his time, thought they would, but the issue there is Isaiah Pede's still kind of coming off an injury. Jay Ajayi got left in Miami for, you know, sulking about not starting. Kenyon Drake really hasn't seen much action. Damian Williams really isn't a runner. So honestly, if you were going to run the ball, you truly had just about one guy to run it with. I think as we get some of our other backs healthy and maybe Kenyon Drake going a little bit more and see if Ajayi wants to participate, play well with others, you'll have to rely less on Foster because I don't think he'll survive the season with that many touches. And I'm not sure exactly how many touches he had, but I kind of feel like it was a lot, especially going against a defense like Seattle. That was the surprising thing. I'm not sure for the running game in general in the future because the Dolphins' run blocking on the offensive line isn't great, but then playing against Seattle may not be the best measuring stick for what they could or could not really do. So we're going to see, but I think we need to try and rely on Foster a little less, but the injuries really made that difficult in this game.
All right, good stuff. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
All right, and our next game is the Bills at the Ravens, and this was not a particularly offensive affair. This was a defensive battle, and it seemed to turn on the guy who's on my fantasy team, which is Mike Wallace, the receiver for the Ravens. But I am here with Robert, our Bills superfan, to recap the game. How did this play out here, Robert?
It was a gross football game. You know, if you like defensive struggles, great, you're gonna love it. But it just wasn't a very offensive, prolific game by any means. From the Bills' perspective, they were able to run the ball a little bit with LeSean McCoy, but it just seemed like they were doing a lot of read option, kind of jet read type deals. They weren't, you know, when you compare it to the offense of last year, it's all same guys from last year. They're not starting anyone new that they, you know, from the year before. It looked like a different offense, though, and it didn't look nearly as well. From Baltimore's perspective, I think the whole game kind of, you know, went down basically to, you know, one play, and it was that long, Mike Wallace touchdown pass. Both teams offensively just kind of played ugly.
And given that it's an ugly game, I mean, is there any silver lining for you as a Bills fan, given all of the injuries you've had on the defensive side of the ball, that, you know, maybe if we can hold opponents to 13 points, that, you know, next time around, you got a shot?
Here's the thing. The thing I took from it is the Bills' best defensive player, Marcell Dareus, was not in the game. He's suspended for not showing up to the drug test. Their defense played better than they played last year. Last year was kind of an odd year. They tried mixing two different styles of defenses, and it didn't work. This year, you could definitely see a difference. Like, they played better. With Darius, offensively, actually, I was pretty confident about the Bills offensively. Last year, they were able to move the ball even on good defenses because their attack is kind of a running attack, but it's a little bit different. They do a lot of, pulling the guard, and they're usually able to, even against really good defense, is able to move the ball. And today they weren't, but I will take, the defense played well. So from that perspective, there is, a little bit of a double line.
And what did you really see from the Ravens this time? I mean, they were sort of the opposite story in that they had just a ton of injuries last year, but they're a team that we generally expect to be good. Is this more of a case of them preying upon your weaknesses, or was this? Do you think that the Ravens are going to be, a team to reckon with this year?
I think the Ravens might be a little better than people think. Their front three, which is Williams, they have Jernigan, and then they have Guy Lawrence, who you may be a little familiar with. I believe that they got him from San Diego. They were really good against the run, like really good. And I mean, the Bills last year, they missed LeSean McCoy for four games and part of the others, and they still were the number one rushing team by a couple hundred yards. I mean, they could run the ball, and they didn't really have too much of an answer for the Baltimore's front set. They were able to do, there were a couple plays here and there where they were able to kind of move the ball on the ground. But it didn't look like a game that was played last year where they were able to, rack up 100 50-yard games. This wasn't one of those games. So I say hats off to Baltimore for playing what might be a really strong defense.
All right. Well, better luck next week, and we'll be in touch, Robert. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Hey, it's Justin, the Seahawks fan. Now, this time I'm going to be talking about the Detroit Lions at the Indianapolis Colts, one of the best games of the week, in my opinion. This one started off looking like it could be a blowout. Detroit goes up 14-0, eventually they're up 21-3, and at this point, Andrew Luck has done almost nothing. That's when things change, though. Andrew Luck comes alive, starts hitting bombs. Dwayne Allen and Doyle, his tight end, start getting wide open, and they come storming back. By the fourth quarter, the game is tied 28-28. That's when things got really interesting. The Detroit Lions drive down, score another touchdown to go ahead. But Matt Prater, the kicker, misses the PAT. This is huge. This gives Andrew Luck and the Colts a chance to drive down and score a touchdown of their own and go ahead by a point on a PAT. However, on that drive, they were trying to burn through the clock, but had to call a timeout. I guess head coach Chuck Pagano didn't like the personnel grouping or something. But they ended up actually preserving about 40 seconds on the clock for the Lions to get their own possession. With less than a minute in the game, Matthew Stafford gets the ball, they drive down within field goal range, and Matt Prater hits a 43-yarder to win it. Absolute nutso barn burner. I mean, this is week one in the NFL, a bunch of games decided by a field goal or less. This was awesome, so a couple of my thoughts. One, I think there's a ton of similarities between Matthew Stafford and Andrew Luck. I know some people are going to say, no, that's crazy. They want to put Andrew Luck on this pedestal. But they're both former number one picks. They both have absolute rockets for arms. They've both been on teams with so talent, though I do think that, in general, the Lions have had a little bit more talent over the years than the Colts. And when you watch them on the football field, they both have the ability to make these stick throws and pick up huge chunks of yards. I think that Matthew Stafford is pretty underrated, and I've been on the record saying I think Andrew Luck is a little overrated. I think those two are incredibly similar. You can look at their early career statistics and see a whole lot of similarities between the two. I do definitely want to give props, though, to what Jim Bob Cooter has done. Matthew Stafford continues to improve. Without Megatron, he spread the ball around, didn't really feature any one receiver, and they put up a ton of points, albeit it's against a really lousy defense. But it's still the NFL. They still count, you know? Now, Andrew Luck, like I said, he started slow, but he was like a man possessed in the second half. Once he finally had some time, he was able to really dissect that Detroit defense. You know, in both cases, I think these are two teams that are going to lean very, very heavily on their offense and will not be able to rely much on their defense. Now, a few other people I want to mention. Theo Riddick had a couple of nice carries, some nice catches, scored one of the touchdowns on the screen. Man, he looked fast out there. He's not the lead back, that's Abdullah, but he looks like he's a real weapon. Doyle and Allen, the tight ends, they're big, they're fast, they've got good hands, they get open, they run really nice routes. So those are some really, really nice weapons for the Colts. The clock management on the part of the Colts, I think, is one of the biggest issues in this. You know, if they hadn't left as much time on the clock, who knows what would have happened, but certainly it would have been much tighter. But you know, these are two teams that I think are fairly evenly matched, which is why it comes down to a field goal at the end. So I don't suspect that either of these teams are a real contender in their division, but there are two teams that, if nothing else, are going to be really exciting to watch this year. So buckle up. It's going to be a wild ride for both of them.
All right, and I am here with our Houston Texans fan, James, to recap their home win, 23-14 over the Chicago Bears. The Bears got out to a pretty hefty start here, James, but how did you guys bring it back?
Well, so the first drive was really interesting. Brock avoided a sack, was able to scramble for a first down. I think between the adrenaline of that little scamper and a little boost in confidence, he got a little aggressive, and so he threw a pick down on about the 20-yard line meant for Hopkins on kind of a theme for the day of him underthrowing passes or just staring down his primary receiver, which is not the making me feel super happy. But prior to that on the drive, Houston was gashing them on the run. They went away from the run for a significant portion of time, which was somewhat confusing to me based on how well Lamar Miller was running, and just kind of made it their goal to get Brock's confidence back. You know, that being said, they had some great, he had some great throws. He had Will Fuller deep behind all the defense, and it went right off of Will Fuller's hands. He would eventually make up for that with a touchdown run on kind of a bubble screen behind the line of scrimmage in the red zone.
But other than that, the defense looked very shaky. Our secondary, when the front seven could not get home to Jay Cutler, they looked bad in coverage. In the first quarter, I wrote down a note that we can't cover Alshon Jeffrey. I can't wait till this burns us when we double-team him. And sure enough, with 10 seconds left in the second quarter, he found more or less a wide-open Eddie Royal for their second touchdown of the game. That had me very frustrated. It seemed like the Bears' strategy from that point forward, which I really couldn't blame them on, was we're just going to chuck it deep to Jeffrey and throw in Eddie Royal every once in a while and try, if not for the catch, then for a couple of defensive pass interference calls. Speaking of pass interference calls, both the Texans and the Bears had an offensive PI called against them, which I think this is the first time I've seen two offensive PI calls in a game that didn't feature Rob Gronkowski. And it was strange because even the announcers were like, well, yeah, I guess you can do that. But they were both, hand-checking each other, and maybe that was kind of a shove. If anything, it was probably illegal hands to the face. But whatever. Chicago probably got screwed the most on a bad referee call on a perfectly executed screen to Jeremy Langford. They ended up calling illegal blocking downfield. And I watched the replay a couple times, and who they called it on was, if he was half a step past the line of scrimmage, I'd be surprised. And, he had the eligible receiver number on, so it was a very strange call. Even the announcers were kind of confused by it. Fourth quarter is kind of when it looked a lot better for the Texans. They still had to drive to take the lead. There was a very stupid audible by Brock to go to a QB sneak on third and one. He got it by, there must have been like a little bit of a scuff mark on the end of the football that put it past the chains. He barely got it. We ended up getting getting a go-ahead touchdown on that play, and we went up by 5 at that point. And I figured, okay, I'll stick around and watch the two-point conversion, but no, we stupidly kicked an extra point to go up by 6 in the fourth, and I was waiting for that to come back to get us, but it ended up not. Texans got after Jay Cutler. It basically went just as Chicago Tom had predicted, that the Chicago front seven would just gradually wear down the Chicago Bears front seven. And by the end of the third quarter, start of the fourth, Cutler did not get any time back there. Texans forced a sack and could have forced a strip sack and could have iced the game right there. But with the three Texans being the closest three players to the ball, our linebacker Bouye tried to scoop and score, and he would have been untouched into the end zone, but just completely whiffed on it. The two Texans that tried to dive to the ground to grab the ball completely whiffed on it, and the Bears got it. They ended up having to punt anyway, but that was frustrating to see. All in all, it's a win. I didn't like having to go down initially to the Bears. I don't think that really bodes too terribly well if you go down to the Chiefs. In a similar manner, it could harken back to what the playoff game was last year, and but looking forward to that game. Obviously disappointed by the loss of Cushing. Looks like he's going to be gone for 6 weeks, also known as half of a Dallas suspension, and we'll be getting him back at a pretty good time. The Bears were able to take advantage of us on the drive when Cushing went down. I think they just needed to make a couple of adjustments. We're still kind of in shock over that injury. But, next couple drives, they picked it right up. Clowney looked really good. Watt didn't look 100% J.J. Watt, but he still looked 100% of most defensive linemen. So that was encouraging.
And Tom, on your side, I think very few people picked the Chicago Bears to win this game, particularly on the road. And there's been a lot of bad juju with the Bears since they had a fairly, a fairly weak showing throughout the preseason. But they came out looking fairly strong. How do you feel about this particular game, Tom?
Well, they did pretty well in the first half for them. I mean, when you consider how well they did against the Chiefs, which is pretty poorly, I thought they looked better than that, probably because of the presence of Alshon Jeffrey and the fact that he was playing reasonably well. I think the Texans went in at halftime and figured out that if they stopped Jeffrey, there wasn't much else left. And that's exactly what happened. Jeffrey didn't have a catch in the second half. He had a very good first half, four catches, 105 yards, but nothing in the second half. And of course, the offense completely stalled at that point and looked a lot like it did against the Chiefs. So I got to say, you know, I wasn't too happy with the offensive performance overall, simply because I think the Texans took a half to figure him out, and I think everybody else will figure him out as well. Unless they start to execute better, you know, they're not going to make very much progress this year. On the defensive side, you know, I thought they were okay. They were left out on the field an awful lot. The Texans, I can't remember exactly what the time of possession was, but it was well over, you know, it was about 35, 36 minutes, something like that, I think, given that, you know, the defense was left out hanging to dry for so long. I thought they played reasonably well and tried to hang tough. They need to play faster. I think, you know, some of the younger guys made some mistakes. I think that was true on both sides of the ball. And they're going to have to learn. But overall, you know, not a very good game offensively, a little bit better defensively, although I'm really cutting them some slack, I think, on that side of the ball as well, just given the poor offensive performance.
Well, I mean, you know, I feel like that's one of the encouraging areas for the Bears in general, is that you do have a front seven that has playmakers that seem to be emerging. You know, aside from the fact that Leonard Floyd got half a sack, you know, which has to be, yeah, that's at least something. What did you see out of the additions that you've made there?
I know that, you know, Floyd got half a sack, but he actually played a pretty good game. When I looked at halftime, he had five tackles. I don't know what he ended up with altogether, but I kept an eye on him and thought he was reasonably solid. I think that, you know, really that entire front seven is still relatively young. I think Lamar Houston's the oldest guy, but the two inside linebackers that they signed in the offseason, Jarrell Freeman and Danny Trevathan, both performed reasonably well, I thought. Eddie Goldman showed up again. He looks like he's emerging in his second year as a pretty good player as well. On the offensive side, you know, Cody Whitehair was starting his first game at center, and although, you know, he made his share of mistakes, I thought he was reasonably solid. He had one very bad snap on a quarterback sneak, but when you've got Vince Wilfork up in your grill and it's your first game ever, you know, at center, you know, maybe that's understandable. I kept an eye on him as well. He was reasonably solid. I think the offensive tackles really had a lot more trouble than the interior of the Bears' offensive line, and I think that's natural. I think the Texans are excellent up front. I agree with everything James is saying, I thought Clowney had a particularly good game in particular, and I'm glad he mentioned him. I thought the Bears' offensive tackles were really hung out and left to block a lot of those guys one-on-one. They didn't get a whole lot of help in the pass protection, and that's a little bit different than last year, where they actually did. Adam Gase held a tight end in an awful lot. It didn't happen a whole lot this game. I thought that really hurt them.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
And in another nail-biter, the New York Giants win 20-19 over the Dallas Cowboys in Dallas. We'd heard all the hype about the Dak Prescott train, I suppose, is what the word I'm looking for here. We heard all the hype about the Dak Prescott train, but it wasn't quite enough to get a win over the New York Giants. Eli had a great game, and I bet Sam, our Giants superfan here, you got to be pretty happy about the way this rolled out.
Yeah, and I think I have to eat a little crow because of my rant about Victor Cruz being the X factor for the Giants, because in this game, that's exactly what he was. He's not getting that first receiver attention, which allows him a lot more one-on-one matchups, and he's really taking advantage of that. So, you know, Eli now has three receivers with Sterling Shepard, the rookie, who also played great today. And I think Eli's in for a good season, and, you know, by extension, the Giants are in for a good season.
Yeah, you guys, like, as you mentioned, you had both Odell and Sterling Shepard both averaging well in, you know, in the high teens in terms of, like, average per catch. Shepard and Cruz both had touchdowns. It seems like you have a very potent offense here. I think also probably a lot of people are surprised. I mean, there's been questions about the Giants' defense for quite a while, ever since JPP's injury and all that. I mean, what did you see in them?
You know, I really have to give a big shout-out to the Cowboys offensive line, even with the rookie quarterback and rookie running back, those guys can block. They have five guys on that line who they're just maulers. So, you know, defensive line had a big test, but I think they passed. There was no running game. Dallas could not run the ball. And they made a rookie quarterback try to make throws. And when he had time, he did. And, you know, towards the end of the game, when the Giants got a little more pressure, he was flustered and he didn't really do much. And big shout out to Olivier Vernon, who I think had four or five tackles, but he got two holds. You know, you're not going to see sacks show up in the box score, but you should know that, you know, he drew, I think, three penalties on the game, plus he had a big tackle for a loss. So that signing was good. Max Harrison was as good as you'd expect. So secondary, they defended every throw well, just Ryan had no space. It was really a good performance. We're just lucky that Tony Romo can stay healthy, because with a healthy quarterback, this Cowboys team would be pretty scary on offense.
And I understand that this game was fairly back and forth. What did you think of the Cowboys, and how do they let this one slip away in terms of how the game played out?
You know, as I was watching the game, I came across one stat that I think boils it down. This was at some point in the middle of the fourth quarter. Red zone stats for the quarterbacks. Dak Prescott, 3 of 5, 16 yards, and only settled for field goals. Eli Manning, 5 of 7, 34 yards, 3 touchdowns. And the Giants got thoroughly outplayed in that first half. It was bad, and Dallas only came away with 9 points. Drives kept stalling once the field got smaller, and the Giants, you know, had that bend-don't-break defense. It really confused Dak, and they weren't able to convert touchdowns. So, you know, the Giants had two scoring drives. They were able to put 13 points on the board. Cowboys had three. They were only able to put 9. So a young quarterback is going to have to learn how to finish his drives off. He was, a 20-20 quarterback. He was great between the 20s, but he couldn't finish drives.
And given this was just a one-point win for you guys, are you worried about, you know, Dak once he's either grown into the role or they have Romo back? I mean, what's your takeaway in terms of what the next matchup between these two teams is going to be like?
Dak is going to be good. He has a strong arm. He makes good reads. He doesn't force too many throws. I think the best thing about Dak Prescott is he knows exactly how good he is. And by that, I mean he doesn't try to fit throws in where he can. He throws balls away. He runs out of bounds. I think he's a really smart player, and I think he's going to be a good quarterback. And talking about Romo, I don't think you can play him, because you can't plan a whole week and then, you know, every time he's tackled, everybody's holding their breath, seeing if he's injured or not. I just don't think you can plan a football team that way. So I think you got to go with Dak. I think he has potential. He made all the throws. He's making good reads, as far as I can tell. We'll see against, you know, more exotic defenses, but I'm impressed by Dak.
Good stuff. Well, thanks a lot, Sam.
No problem.
There you have it. With the exception of the Monday night games, week one is in the books. What a good feeling to have football back. So what did we learn today? We learned betdsi.com, promo code FANUP10. Remember that one. We learned the Seahawks could probably use an offensive line. We learned Bill Belichick is probably the real MVP of the Patriots, but we probably already knew that. We learned Alex Smith is a good quarterback, regardless of what Greg, our Steelers superfan, says. We learned Jack Del Rio probably has more guts than sense, but that'll make for a fun viewing experience in Oakland. But as always, we'll give the last word to Coach Jeff Fisher. Hey, Coach Fisher, what did you learn today?
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.
You guys just don't know how drunk I am.
I'm trying to figure out how to hang up.